Did you get to play in the snow last weekend?
Yeah, the 2 days that it lasted, at, I didn't get the sledge out, but yeah, it's very nice. Did some walks and took some photographs. Made the most of it. What about you? Did you get stuck in a snowdrift again?
No. I did a walk from my front door, which ended up in Trowbridge Park. And actually, that was enough because nothing had been gritted. The footpaths were pretty slippy, and actually, Trowbridge looked pretty good in the snow. I thought,
Quite impressed. There's some nice photographs on the Facebook group. Trowbridge in the snow.
Trowbridge in the snow. That's a story in itself. So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden, or try to. My name is Glyn Coy, and I'm a person that takes photographs in Wiltshire, amongst other things. And with me, I have Paul Timlett.
Yes, good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever it is. But yes, I'm also a person who lives in Wiltshire and takes photographs.
So, Paul, I think you wanted to start this podcast with a few words.
The first is a question, I think. So when you blagged me into doing this podcast, Glyn, last year, I forgot to ask you one very, very important question. Was, do you have a bleeper when you do the editing? Because, as you know, I'm wont to shower profanities around, and I wouldn't want to offend people or scare dogs and cats and small children. So, because there's a couple of things I want to sort of get off my chest today, so you might need that bleep box.
So this week we're going to cover an area of Wiltshire that's actually very close to me, in the sense that it's not that far away, but also it's a place that I go to quite a lot to walk, to take photographs, to, you know, just find a bit of peace in the world. It's only 10 minutes drive from home, and the scenery up there is absolutely fantastic. What I'm talking about are the hills above the villages of Bratton and Eddington. And as we go through and talk about what can be found there and the type of things you can see, I'll also reference back to a walk that I did, as a circular walk that I did from the car park at Westbury White Horse, which takes in that whole area, and it's on the website. So we'll put links in the show notes so people can find it. So I also know that, Paul, it's a place you've been to as well, because you did this walk just before Christmas, I think, actually.
With my good mate Stu, who I've mentioned before, my walking buddy. I think we followed your walk, actually. I haven't seen it on the Facebook group, so we decided to go and do it. Whenever that was. I must admit today that I think people probably think we just sit and blather when we do these things, but they might be shocked to hear there's a bit of preparation and a bit of homework. But I have to confess, I misread the exam question for today because I forgot we were talking about Bratton. So I've spent a lot of time reminding myself or refreshing my memory about Eddington. I thought this about half an hour ago. Oh my God, we're supposed to be talking about Bratton as well.
Have to give you some punishment for the not being prepared. 100 lines.
100 lines, yes.
Due by the end of the day.
I will not swear on the podcast.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but we can get there quite quickly. So let me start this with saying that when I did this walk, I'd never been to when I first did it, I hadn't been to this area before. I'd been up to the White Horse, but I'd never done the walk over to Eddington and Pickett Hill and beyond. And since then, I've explored it all many, many times. So I was blown away by the scenery. And this walk itself is actually one that if I have people coming to visit Wiltshire and I want to give them a flavour of somewhere that's off the beaten track, it's not Stonehenge, it's not Avebury, but it's just Wiltshire. This is the walk I take them on, because it has some fairly dramatic scenery. It has a good amount of hills, so there's a bit of up and down. And there's lots of interesting things to see along the way. And we'll talk through some of those because there's some interesting places to see. There's also some folklore that we can dip into. And there's an awful lot of history. Obviously, Bratton Camp itself, above the White Horse, you've got a massive Iron Age hill fort, a long barrow. But there's also a curious story about the Vikings, which we'll touch on as well. So, because when once I parked in the car park by the Westbury White Horse, I didn't go to the White Horse. I walked in the other direction over towards Bratton. And on the other side of the car park, there was this sarsen stone planted in the ground with a plaque on it. And it was put there to commemorate the Battle of Edington, exact location of which no one really knows. But there's a school of thought that says it might be on Bratton Camp.
Or the Battle of Effenden, as it was known back then.
That's it.
In 878 AD.
Yes. It's funny because as you go into Edington along the road, the sites to the village are there at the entrance of the village, and they've got reference to that 878, and I think there's a sort of painting of King Alfred on there as well.
That's right, yeah. It's I mean, you know, like you, this is one of my sort of favorite areas, and I've sort of done bits and pieces of walks, but not a circular thing like the, you know, as you described. You know, it's actually not very far from the subject of the previous podcasts from Imber. So if people don't know where it is, I mean, it's very close to Westbury, the town of Westbury. It's what, to the east of Westbury, isn't it? On the road between Westbury and Market Lavington, it lies to the north of the Salisbury Plain training area. And it's sort of south of places like sort of Steeple Ashton and around there. Just before you sort of continue about the history, I was looking at the sort of geography of the area as well, because it's something that sort of always interests me, and the different sort of strata. So to the north, you've got what's called Kimmeridge clay, this sort of strata of Kimmeridge clay. And then, of course, you go south to towards Salisbury Plain, which is chalk. It's chalk escarpment. But the area that we're talking about today, sort of Edington, Bratton, is a sort of outcrop of upper greensand and gault. Gault is a sort of form of clay. And this sort of outcrop, which is overlain by the chalk, sort of projects out towards the Kimmeridge clay to the north. And I think that's probably, you know, explains A, why people settled there, because it's also the source of springs, which we'll come on to talk about. It's obviously sort of, you know, the features, the geological features there made it a good place for people to settle. And, you know, as far back as the Neolithic period. It's historically a very significant place, and has been occupied by man for 5,000-6,000 years.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary amount of time. But when you get to know the area, you can understand why, particularly when you discover the springs, which we'll go on to talk about. Because they're interesting in themselves. But going back to the history, somewhere in this region, somewhere in those hills above there, we're fairly sure that that's where the Battle of Effenden or the Battle of Edington took place. And there are two locations where it's rumoured to have taken place. One is on around Bratton Camp Hillfort. And by the way, there's a great picture of Bratton Camp Hillfort that I say great. I'm not being very modest, am I? Because it's one of mine. I put it up on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. If you search for me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is @Glyndle, GLYNDLE. I took an aerial photo a few years ago of Bratton Camp and the Westbury White Horse. So in this shot, you can see the White Horse, but actually, the shot takes in the whole perimeter of the Iron Age camp. So you can see the scale of it and the size of the ramparts. And it's such an impressive sight. The amount of labor, you know, used to build that is astonishing.
Yeah, you don't really get an impression of the size of it when you're up there, do you?
I mean,
no. You're looking out, you're looking at the views, yeah, which are immense from up there.
And I've had so many people comment on it, you know, and say, you know, I knew there was a fort up there, but I had no idea it looked like that. Or some people even said, I had no idea there was a fort up there, because they go up to see the White Horse and they look at the views. Yeah. They don't think that actually that what they're walking around are Iron Age ramparts.
Yeah. And of course, before that, you've got Neolithic settlements up there. So there's, you know, the Long Barrows, you know, sort of burial place from around 3000 BC. So, you know, you're looking at human habitation there for, or certainly a place where humans gravitated towards going back 5,000 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And there is that you can still see the remains of a long barrow on the summit of the hill. It's not in good shape, but from above, you can still see it's clearly there. It's clearly identifiable.
I was looking at, I was just doing a bit of homework before we started recording about the hill fort. And, you know, when you look at sort of what was there, you know, in fact, I think it was the English Heritage Site I was looking at, talking about, you know, roundhouses, granaries, stores, workshops. You know, it was a pretty substantial settlement.
But the next hill along from Bratton Camp is Pickett Hill. And that's another place which people have suggested might have been the site of the battle, which is more above Eddington than Bratton. And there's an intriguing folklore story around that area, because just below Pickett Hill, of course, you've got the contours of Luckham Bottom. There's that word again, bottom, a dry valley, which has been carved out by the water that came from the springs many, many years ago, thousands of years ago. But down at the base of Luckham Bottom is a sarsen stone just sitting there. And locals call that the Bloodstone. And when you look at it, it does have a kind of orange hue in the sunlight. So it is quite mysterious. But the folklore and the legend says that when the Danes were defeated, the Vikings were defeated by King Alfred in that area, that they used that stone as a place to behead the defeated Vikings. Now, it's probably not true, but it's an interesting story, and it's nice place to take your children if you want to give them nightmares, to worry about why the stone is particularly orange. But I think the history was at the time that the Vikings had you know, were running riot in Wessex, and they'd taken Chippenham, and King Alfred had retreated to the Somerset Marshes to gather his forces. And he came back when he'd got enough forces together, he came back to draw them out of the fortress of Chippenham and into open battle. And as he did that, he would have passed through the Deverells, which will be a subject for next week.
But 2 weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks, yeah. Sorry. He passed through the Deverells. He would have come through towards Westbury. Apparently, they camped at a place called Eyley Oak on the way the night before. And Eyley Oak is rumoured to be in Southlee Wood, which is close to Warminster. And the location of Eyley Oak is generally thought by many people to be a place called Robin Hood's Bower, which we can look at in another podcast. But that's a mysterious place in itself.
That is weird.
It is very weird. And then they would have come through the Westbury area and over towards Bratton and Eddington to have the battle, which pretty much changed the course of Anglo-Saxon history from that point on.
Yeah, pretty much drove the Danes, who were led by King Guthrum. The Danes were defeated at the Battle of Ethandune, and Guthrum was sort of driven back to East Anglia, I believe, eventually. I think via, was it via Chippenham? Did he go to sort of Chippenham for, I think, about a year and then went back all the way to East Anglia? And he, Guthrum converted to Christianity, and whether he properly converted or did it just to keep his head on, I don't know. But anyway, he sort of converted, but it pretty much sort of drove the Danes right back. And it sort of, I read somewhere that it was kind of like the beginnings of the formation of a sort of wider United Kingdom. I think you still had the Kingdom of Mercia up in the Midlands to the north, but it certainly sort of united sort of Wessex, you know, to wherever Wessex ended. And I'm sure somebody will tell us.
Yeah.
But it was pretty sort of pivotal moment in time.
Yeah, almost like a seminal moment in the creation of the nation of England.
Yeah.
In itself. Fascinating, isn't it? But we don't know for sure exactly where these events took place, but general consensus is it was somewhere in this area.
Mm-hmm.
So on the walk, after I left the memorial Sarsen stone that's by the car park at the Westbury White Horse, I headed to the right and then the left and picked up the road, which takes you right across the edge of Salisbury Plain, really. It's right on the edge of the danger area. So as you go down the road on the right, you can see all the signs saying keep out. The thing that always makes me laugh about that is you see these signs saying danger, keep out, risk of death, don't dare cross the threshold. And then for miles in the distance you can see cows
yes.
Abandoned. Obviously not concerned about shrapnel and landmines.
Every now and then you can see one go off bang, and a cow, so it's blown into the sky.
yeah
no, I know what you mean. I mean it's similar to you know what we were talking about, the Warminster skyline one. I mean there's this East Hill Farm around there where in fact, there's a one of the people who sort of lives there. She's got a great Instagram feed. I think it's called Far From the Madding Cows. And,
oh, I've seen that one.
Yeah, she posts sort of little video clips every day. And they farm, they graze cows out in the danger area. So every now and then, if the flags go up, they have to go and get the cows and then move them off somewhere. But yes, it always intrigues me. You know, if it's dangerous for us, why isn't it dangerous for cows and farmers?
Yeah. Anyway, then I carried on the walk along. It's walking along a long straight road. It's not a great walk that bit. But the views are pretty good.
The views
on the left
are tremendous,
right.
Yeah,
because you look across towards Longcombe Bottom and Luckham Bottom, and you see Pickett Hill. It's a pretty dramatic piece of scenery.
And to the south, you can see way out onto the Imber Ranges.
Yes, you can. So you're heading along that track towards Reeves Farm. Now, on the left, before you get there, in the field just above Longcombe Bottom, last year, in the early part of the summer, the field up there was absolutely covered in red poppies. It was an astonishing sight, and it started to attract a lot of people from outside the area. And I understand the farmer wasn't very happy about that, but I wouldn't ever encourage trespass, but you could easily stand by the road and play around with your zoom lens and get some fantastic shots from there. But it'll be interesting to see if it's as red this year as it was last year.
So was that your fault then, that all these people rocked up to see the
actually no, because I'd already seen some social media stuff about it which drew me to go to it actually. So but I'm sure I didn't help once I posted it on the website. I think I did get a message from somebody suggesting that it might not be a good idea to encourage people to trespass on the field.
I didn't
encourage them to
trespass.
But anyway, but the other thing that's interesting along that road, and I only discovered this recently, is just before you get to Reeves Farm on the right-hand side, hidden behind a sort of gate and a few shrubs, is an old bunker, which dates back to the Cold War. And these are observation posts for the military who, during the Cold War, would I believe, sit in them and take measurements of the atmosphere and all sorts of things. And Some of them are still in existence, and I think the one in Great Bedwin has been refurbed, and it's like a museum piece. You can actually go down the ladder inside, but there is one there just to the right of the road.
And it's so well hidden that when I did the walk a couple of months ago, I didn't even notice it. So we walked along that track, and it was only when I read, I think you, was it you or somebody put a post on the Facebook group about it, and I had absolutely no idea it was there.
Well, look, the first time I walked down that way, I sort of stopped for a drink of water by a gate, and I glanced across, and I think on the Ordnance Survey map, it mentions there's a reservoir up there, one of those underground reservoirs, and I think there is.
Yeah.
But this particular structure looked really strange, and I went there and had a nose around. Clambered over the gate just to have a closer look, and then thought, what on earth is this? And I had no idea, and then I forgot about it. And then a few weeks ago, there was like, I can't remember who it was on a Facebook group, but somebody put a post about these observation bunkers, and I had a click through, and I realized that's what it was. Now the actual hatch to get into it had a massive concrete block on top, so there's no way you could climb into it, but it's still there, it still exists. It would be fun to try and get into one of those days, but
And just after that, the point where you're talking and you've got Reeves Farm down to the north, to the left, there is a vedette, sort of, you know, with a back barrier to the head south, which actually heads out onto the Imber Ranges. Now, obviously, you can't go down there unless the ranges are open, which these days is really only sort of a few days around Christmas and New Year. But again, sort of harking back to the Imber podcast we did, you know, when that is open, you can, it's quite interesting to head down that track on the right there, because not too far down there is another long barrow, or sorry, a round barrow, which apparently our friend Cunnington opened in 1801, I think, and there was at least one, possibly two, burials in there, or cremations, sort of one on top of the other, but quite a few grave goods as well, sort of, you know, daggers, spears, javelins, that sort of thing, as well as burnt bones. But as I say, that's just sort of through the vedette when it's open, as you head out onto the Imber Ranges to toward Ladywell. Actually, there's on the road from Imber to Warminster, there's an optimal farm buildings, which was quite a big farm in its day, called Ladywell. So I mean, you look it up on a map. So if you're going traveling from sort of Ladywell up the road to, heading towards Bratton, that's where this barrow is. I mean, you can't miss it. It's right by the track.
That's interesting. I mean, that's, you've got me there, because that's something that I've missed. Because I, a few years ago, the very first time I went up to Imber, I went up from Bratton, up the Imber Road past Reeves Farm, and went past that vedette and down that road towards Ladywell. And I didn't see it, but I wasn't looking for it back then. I wasn't.
No, I think it's easier to see coming from the other direction from Imber. So, you know, if memory serves, you sort of down a hill and back up. But I just remember seeing this, like a lot, and we'll talk in a minute about Tinhead, but it's a bit like that, this sort of round barrow with some trees, and it was the trees that struck me first, one of these little, you know, classic Wiltshire clumps, and then you sort of notice that there's a barrow in there.
Yes, yeah. So there are more long barrows in this area, because there's one that I'm particularly fond of, not far from Reeves Farm, across the hill, towards Tinhead Hill. You've got Tinhead Long Barrow, which is in the middle of a farmer's field, so it's on private land, so you can't go wandering onto it, and it is fenced off. But it does occupy a prominent position on Tinhead Hill, and it's covered in a clump of trees. And it's one of my markers in the landscape, because wherever I am in the local area, I can get my bearings by looking up. And if I see the long barrow, the clump of trees, I know exactly where I am. It's that prominent. And it's just another example of how when they built these things, they were built to be seen. They were built to be seen lower level from miles around, and were making a statement. So it's fascinating, really.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you there.
Go on.
Because the one at Tinhead, actually, you can't see it from that far away. Now, you know, it depends which angle you're coming at it. But I think what you first see is the woods, which are, you know, or the cops, which I guess is probably beach, if, again, if memory serves. But the barrow itself, the long barrow, and I think I read this in an archaeology book, was that, I mean, you're right, most barrows were sort of in quite prominent positions, and obviously much later on, hill forts were by and large in prominent positions. They were there to be seen. But that one and several others in our area are, you know, comparatively sort of discreet. And I was just trying to find the dimensions of the thing, because it's actually not that high. Now, you know, it may well be it's been sort of eroded over the years. It's certainly been it's been cut into in terms of its length. I think at one point it was something like 70 meters long. And then bits have been sort of lopped off it. I think at one end there's been some chalk quarrying, which again is very common, obviously, in our area on a chalk escarpment, and a lot of barrows have been sort of cut into for the chalk, including on Picket Hill, I think. So the one on Tinhead is now what you see today. It's shorter than it was originally built, and also it's not as wide as it used to be. And again, you know, you mentioned it's in a field, and a farmer's field. It's, you know, you can't go in there. He's growing crops all around it, and clearly it's been over generations. It's been ploughed into. So it's a little bit smaller now than it's thought that it was. But yeah, it's not that prominent unless you're in the sort of the immediate vicinity.
Yeah, you can certainly see it from the Trowbridge area. I can see it from Hill.
Can you can see it up there? Can you see the barrow or the trees?
Well, your eyes are drawn to the trees today.
Yeah.
Because that's the prominent feature.
Yeah.
And I've also seen it. You can see it quite prominently from Seend as well. If you're going down towards Wharton and Potter and that way from Seend, you can see it as you. The building that used to be the Bell Inn, from there you can kind of see it on the other side
of
the valley. So it's you can see it, but yeah, you're right, it's the trees that make it stand out today.
Yeah,
but it does make me wonder what was the scale of it in the past, and, you know, what did it look like? Was it chalk? Was it white?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when they first dig the things, they're going to be, you know, brilliant white.
There was a
completely different part of the country, but as you know, I was in the Hebrides, tail end of last year, and there was a burial mound on North Uist, which is still sort of, I don't know, they must have done something, but this thing is pristine white, and it sits on top of a hill, and it's just this sort of pristine white sort of barrow. And it's not chalk, but I don't know what it is, with granite or whatever. But yeah, these, you know, obviously when you dig into the ground and you pile up a load of soil around here, it's going to be white. But I've just found my notes on the dimensions. It was originally, I think it was 77 meters long, and it's now 62 meters. And the width, it used to be 29 meters, I think, and it's now about 17. So it's not massively smaller. But yeah, it's only a meter high.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. I tell you what, I took some great photos last year of that field, because he had a rapeseed crop in there.
That's right.
So yeah. It was bright yellow.
Yeah.
The colours were absolutely amazing. You don't see... I had a discussion with someone about this, but the amount of rapeseed in the area, it seems to have gone down over the last few years. And apparently there is a reason for that.
Oh, go on.
It's something to do with it not being as an economic a crop at the moment because of some, I mean, somebody quoted to me some EU regulations, but you never know. But there was something going on with the crop itself which made it less viable.
Well, there's in Shrewton here, there's a farm, there was a family who farmed here for generations, Grant's farm, and Ellie Grant, the sort of you know, wife of the current farmer there, she makes rapeseed oil, and it's wonderful stuff. It's delicious, and I, you know, we cook with it, we put it on salads. It's called, I mean, she trades as the Magnificent Seed, and she sells it up at the farm, and as well as, you know, other outlets are available, but she sells it for, you know, all over the place, as well as online. But they, so around here, around Shrewton, there are, you know, they obviously rotate the land. So last year there was a huge field of rapeseed on the edge of the village, and next year's is already growing sort of nearer towards Lark Hill. But around here, yeah, there's a hell of a lot of rapeseed. So maybe, I don't know, maybe they've just sort of changed the location. Maybe, you know, maybe the weather's changed, the climate's changed. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
I know that in previous years, there's been quite a lot of rapeseed on that road from Devizes to Avebury.
Yeah.
But I didn't see there was any this year. So maybe they rotate the fields. But
yeah, they do. I mean, they generally, it's a 3-year rotation. It's generally how it works. So, you know, the last year's rapeseed oil, that field now, which actually, I mean, it's a subject to another podcast, I think, but is by what's called Shrewton Airfield. So during the war, there was an airfield there, and I think they call it the landing ground, was that field. And so this year it'll be something different. I'm quite sure what they're growing up there now, but they definitely rotate. They have to. Can I have a little bit of a rant?
Go for it.
So when I did that walk, you know, your walk, I sort of went along that sort of path that you've got Tottenham. Is it Tottenham Wood?
Tottenham Wood, yeah.
Tottenham Wood on the right, and then you look across the fields to your left, and you've got the Long Barrow and the copse of trees, and it's beautiful. It's an absolutely stunning location as you sort of come down the hill. You start to sort of descend to the north, and it's obviously very, very popular with dog walkers. And Stuart and I were just astonished at the amount of, we, you know, say dog poo along the edge of that field. And there was quite a few sort of cars sort of parked on the road up from Bratton. So people obviously sort of drive up there with their dogs, and it was just everywhere. I lost count the number of piles of it, and, you know, stepping over it. And, you know, I think, well, you know, people obviously go up there because of, you know, it's a beautiful place and the views, but why do that to the place? You know, it's just, why not just take it with you? I just don't understand it. But anyway, rant over, and I didn't swear.
Actually, that just reminded me, because I've seen a lot of dog walkers over by Stoke Hill Farm over that side. So, because around that area, around the sort of Tin Head area, if you get in the right spot and you know where to stand with a camera, you can look across the valley towards Stoke Hill Farm and spot that famous tree that was in the 1917 movie.
Oh, the lollipop tree.
The lollipop tree, yeah. We'll save that for another podcast maybe, but there is a vantage point somewhere around there. If you look around and find it, where you can get a zoom lens and get a nice shot of it from across the valley.
You can see why they use that tree. I mean, it's just, you can see it from a long, long way off.
You can. Okay. Now the other place where you go to on this walk, which is a fantastic place for photography, is Pickett Hill.
Yeah.
So from the vedette that leads that guards the road towards Imber, there is a trackway that can take you diagonally across to the summit of Pickett Hill. And from there are a couple of benches up there which are nice places to sit and contemplate the world. But the views across, you know, Luckham Bottom, across to Longcombe Bottom, back across to Bratton Camp, are just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, on a summer's day, you could spend all day sitting up there, couldn't you?
You could. I mean, I tend to, in the summer, I like to go up there at night when the sun's coming down, to because the shadows you get in the valleys create some really interesting shots. It's a favourite place of mine to go, and it's quite a dramatic hillside, really, because you've got the Luckham Bottom is kind of carved out like an amphitheatre, You can see why some of the locals call it Happy Valley, because it's quite a happy place.
I didn't know that, but yeah, it's funny you use the word amphitheatre. That's exactly the word I had in my mind, and it's. I think what strikes me about that is just the. I mean, there are a lot of barrows up there. You know, there's bowl barrows. There's a saucer barrow, which are actually comparatively rare. I think I read somewhere that there's about 60 saucer barrows in the whole of the country, and most of them are in Wessex region, and one of them is up on Pickett Hill. And you've got there's a couple of bowl barrows up there, but as you sort of descend into Luckenbottom Bottom. There are a couple of, I think there's a couple of pillow barrows to the north of that sort of amphitheatre. So there's all these sort of shapes in the landscape, as well as I think sort of where it's been farmed and the sort of ripples you get in the hillside. I mean, it's so, as you say, for photography, it's fantastic because the way the sort of the light sort of, you know, when the sun's setting over in the west, and it sort of they're all picked out in sort of, you know, the shadows, you know, the light and shadow picks out all these shapes in the landscape, and you could just stare at it for hours.
You can. And the good thing to know as well is that area, Luckenbottom, Pickett Hill, has got a right to roam across the whole area, so you can explore it extensively, and it is worth spending quite a lot of time there and having a look. And actually, one thing I noticed in the summer is Pickett Hill itself is a fantastic place for wild orchids. I managed to find some bee orchids up there this year, which was quite impressive.
Not as
good as Parsonage Down, of course, but it's still worth a visit.
I think we'll just come on and I think talk about the spring in a minute. But just before we do, it's probably worth sort of explaining how you get from Pickett Hill down to, you know, the spring line. I mean, you talked about the Bloodstone earlier on. And obviously when Stuart and I were walking it, I was sort of messaging you saying, Glyn, how the hell do I get down from up here to down there? You know, where do I go? And that was, I think it was that point you messaged me back and said it's all open access anyway. So if you're on Pickett Hill, there's a couple of gates, isn't there? And you're sort of looking down into sort of Luckenbottom in front of you, and the amphitheatre all sort of, you know, laid out in front of you. And we went wrong. We went sort of down the sort of the bottom, if you like, bottom of the bottom of the Drive Valley, when we subsequently found out that we should have been higher up to our right, up the slope to the right.
Yes.
And then sort of swing round behind the woods before heading down to your bearing left towards the spring line at the bottom. Initially, we were a bit concerned that we were sort of, you know, I've been trespassing on private land, but as we've said, it's open access. And in fact, we saw somebody walking their dogs up on the other side of the sort of, you know, the amphitheatre. So the what would have been the north facing slope, and somebody was coming up from sort of spring line. So I think you can get to the spring. So I think if you sort of, this would be quite hard to follow if you're just listening, but you've got like a sort of big bowl laid out in front of you, and you can get down to the bottom either by going around the right hand rim of the bowl or the left hand rim.
Correct. So I did what you did. I mean, I was looking at the Bloodstone. And what I did is I just went south from the, well, just down from there into the bow, like you said, and there's a line of trees and you just can't get through there. No. But there is a path on the left and there is a path on the right. I took, on that particular day, I took the right-hand way in, which takes you back up over the hill on the other side, and there's a trackway that brings you right out by the spring. But you can go on the right-hand side where you clamber over a metal gate.
That's it.
And that will take you into the path. So once you're into the spring area, you are onto private land there. But there are rights of way. Both, you know, formal rights of way and permissive rights of way from the landowner.
So let's talk about the spring. Thank you.
Yeah, the springs. What we've just been talking about is Luckham Springs. There are a couple of other springs in this area as well, which are worthy of exploration. But I think Luckham is the biggest one and the most interesting in terms of visiting. The only thing I would reiterate is that it is on private land. So, you know, just as a matter of good practice, you know, treat it with respect, because in the past they've had issues with people littering and youngsters gathering there in the summer and trying to go swimming and the rest of it. So it is a place that's, you know, we need to treat with respect to keep access to it. Really.
It's pretty well marked out though, isn't it? We've got some duck boards because it's blooming wet around there.
Yeah, I think it used to be they used to call it the water meadow. So it's very wet.
And of course, you're under trees as well, so you're still in the wood. So it remains wet most of the time, or much of the year, I think.
I think the thing that I was quite surprised at because I'd seen it on the map as Luckham Springs, and I assumed it would be wet, but I didn't quite know how the spring would present itself, and it's a bit strange because it looks like a drain.
Yeah, it's just a pipe.
It's a drain. Yeah. Like a drain pipe, and the water literally gushes out of it. It's quite a strong, you know, current coming out of it. So there's an enormous amount of water that's coming up out of the spring.
I did a couple of slow motion videos, just did it on my phone. So sort of got in the water and sort of looking back towards that drain and it makes for quite a nice little slow motion video.
Yeah, it's... there's a lot of water that comes out of it. It was a very interesting place to visit, and it's not so well known.
I was just trying to find the so that bit of, so you've got the spring and it sort of flows down towards Bratton, which we should just mention the footpath there in a second, but I think that's actually called the Stradbrook, isn't it? Stradbrook.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Is the old name for it, and of course, if you were in Bratton coming back up trying to find the spring, that I think the street is actually called Stradbrook, isn't it?
It is called Stradbrook. Yeah.
But if you're if you're trying to follow the Glynn's Walk. So you come from the springs and you follow the sort of little duckboard, and if you're following the sort of spring line, and there's a little bit of sort of not confusion, but the path sort of splits. And I mean, basically the story is that the owners of Luckham Mill, who some sort of vague connection with royalty, if I remember correctly, but they bought Luckham Mill some years ago, and either they didn't know or weren't told, I don't know, but they claim that they didn't realise it was a public right of way basically across their garden along the up above the banks of the Stradbrook, and you know, I have some sympathy, you know, it's not great having a public right of way across your garden, because I've got one as well. But so what they've done is create a sort of permissive footpath. So again, if you're heading from the spring back towards Bratton, the permissive footpath, which is very, very clear and very well signposted, is off to sort of the left. And then you've got a large, very, very high hedge. And then the public footpath is to the right of the hedge, basically in their garden. Now the permissive path crossed the field where there was sheep grazing in there, and it's a perfectly good right of way. There's no issue about going through there. It's not difficult. Whereas the public footpath, there's no escaping the fact it's probably a prettier looking route because you're looking down at the river. But I think there's been quite a lot of dispute about the rights of way there. And quite understandably, the owners of Luckham Mill would prefer that people didn't walk across their garden, even though you're allowed to. So we Stuart and I certainly we walked along the permissive path. It was fine, and you know, you get the old glimpse of the stream, and you know, that was good enough for us.
Yeah, I think the landowner is encouraging people to use the permissive path through the meadow, which is fair enough. I mean, but I think the issue on that was that there wasn't a formal right of way at the time they bought the property.
Ah, right.
And it was, and I think then he tried to stop people walking through his garden, and then some of the villagers went to Wiltshire Council and said that because they've been walking there for donkey's years, it should be a right of way. So I think a right of way was established, but now I think there is some discussion about moving it into the field. But it is a bit confusing because the actual official right of way goes through the garden, but the landowner's signage pretty much says, "Don't go through my garden, go that way through the field." So I'm fine with that. I'm not happy about walking through someone's garden anyway, but I don't want to get involved in a dispute about rights of way.
I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the permissive path.
Yeah. So when you're in this area and you if you do end up at the Springs, then you're ending up in the village of Bratton. And there are a number of different walks and routes you can take from Picket Hill. You can either go through the Springs or you can go down what's marked on the map as Sandy Lane. And then across Sandy Lane, there's a path that takes you around a field that brings you out on one of the minor roads through Bratton. I wouldn't recommend doing what I did the first time I did this walk, which was turn left at the bottom of Sandy Lane and walk to Bratton along the main road.
That's what we did. I did that one on my own, I think. It's not pleasant walking on that road.
Some people are speeding a bit, I would say, along that road, and there's no footpath, so it's pretty hair-raising. So I wouldn't recommend that. But the way to get back to the Westbury White Horse, you end up taking a road that takes you up to Bratton Church, which is, I have to say, one of the most beautiful, picturesque.
Beautiful, very peaceful, tucked away up the end of the road. The road doesn't go anywhere, it just stops at the church, and it's a beautifully peaceful place. I was going to say, in the summer, but any time of the year, I always stop there, normally to eat my sandwiches, but it's a fantastic spot.
Yeah, it's a peaceful place. I mean, whenever I'm doing a walk, it's usually by the time I've got to Bratton, I've been walking a few miles. So the church is a nice place. It's mostly open, so you can sit inside and just, contemplate life itself and all the rest of it, and just have a bit of a peaceful, it's like a place of pilgrimage for me, really.
Yeah, I think what was nice about it, that even during sort of lockdown, lockdown when we were allowed to sort of, drive up the road and do a walk, which at the moment I'm not doing, but I think last summer it must have been when I first did the walk, and the church was open. I mean, a lot of churches were locked because of the COVID risk, but that one was open, so it was lovely to sort of just go in there and have a look around. And they had all the usual sort of precautions with hand sanitizer and all the rest of it. So they did it very, very well.
Yeah, and the walk up to the church up that road, you're going through, it's like a gorge, really. It's like a small valley. So the houses there have got these dramatic gardens that go downhill towards the stream, because at the base of the hill where the church is another spring. You've got church springs there, which aren't as dramatic as Luckham, but you've got another source of water that's coming up from Salisbury Plain.
Of course, you've got that. There's a cottage there, and it's barely even a stream. It's just a sort of trickle that comes down. And the owners of the cottage, has made all these little sort of like wooden toys and things. And there's like a little, I think it was a little windmill and a water mill or something, and these little model aeroplanes and stuff. Yeah. I always stop there and have a look. And no matter how many times you see it, it always stops me in my tracks.
Yeah. And the other thing, while we're still on springs, and again, this is a bit of a diversion from the church, but there is another spring in the area, which I discovered last year in Eddington. I think it's called the Monk's Well. And now, I couldn't begin to explain how to get there, because it's blooming difficult to find, and it's not on the maps. But it's just off the main road as you go through Eddington, and there's a tiny little right-of-way marking on the Ordnance Survey map. And at the time, it took you through some quite muddy trackways through a wooded area. And at the bottom, you had this sort of, I think it's a 14th century building over the top of the spring, which would have fed the water through to the priory, which is...
Yeah, I think it's called a conduit, isn't it? It's a,
yeah.
It's a little bit... I would add, I've not actually seen it myself, but when I think, again, it came up on the Facebook group a few days ago, and I was trying to figure out where it was. But as you say, I'm looking at the map now on the 1 to 25,000. There is a very, very short sort of public footpath that literally leads from the main, whatever that road is, the B, whatever, to Bratney. So it's off the main road anyway. There's a very short stretch of public footpath, heads north, and just stops. And I can see on the map this little building marked there. And it doesn't go anywhere. It just goes, you know, to the building, then back up to the road.
Yeah. And I think when I drove past there before lockdown, I noticed that someone had cut the trees down in there, so it may be a bit easier to get into. Certainly when I went, it was quite muddy and messy and quite hard to get. You felt like you were hacking through the jungle to get there.
Mm.
But it was a fantastic little piece of history to find. And the water, again, quite a lot of water coming up from the ground. But yeah, another thing which not many people know about unless you're living in the village, really.
I think, I mean, to have the spring there, you know, probably suggests the importance of the priory, because I think it was there to to feed the priory, which was, there was an order of monks there up to, well, to the dissolution of the monasteries when Henry VIII sort of destroyed them all. But sadly, there's almost nothing left of the priory now. But there are, I think there's a wall left in the gardens, so just to the southeast of the church, which I must admit, I've never been in the church at Eddington, but it looks stunning from the outside. And then I'm looking at the map, just to the north, northwest of the church, there are the fish ponds, or a fish pond, which again was part of the priory, the monastery. So it was, you know, I think it was quite a big priory in its time, and quite an important one. And I was also reading that, think back to the bloodstone, and of course, yeah, it looks like the locals around there have got a bit of a history, because apparently in 1450, the Bishop of Salisbury, who was celebrating Mass there, was hauled off by the locals and taken up to the hills and stoned to death. So
it's something in those spring waters.
Yeah, like something in the water, yeah, exactly.
I think the land behind the existing church, I think it's owned by, I don't know the name of the gentleman, but it's owned by an American,
yeah,
who's invested in the village and set up the Three Daggers.
Three Daggers, yeah.
Which... And the farm shop there, which is a fantastic place.
Oh, it's super.
During normal times, yeah, where you can stop for a coffee and a piece of cake.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fantastic.
And he brews his own beer there as well, which is fantastic beer.
But I know that one thing I like to do when I'm walking in that area during normal times is, if I'm up on the hills, you can drop down on some of the rights of way to the main road and stop off at the Three Daggers,
yeah,
farm shop for a coffee before wandering back to the car.
Not necessarily in a straight line. If somebody else is driving, of course.
Yeah. But just to finish the circle of the walk, from Bratton Church, there are some footpaths that take you up alongside Coombe Bottom all the way back to the hill fort and the car park. It's a nice lung busting walk, very picturesque as you look back. I've taken many very nice photos walking up that particular footpath.
Yeah, it's another one where, you know, the setting sun, or even the rising sun, if you go earlier in the day really picks out that you know, the shapes in the landscape there, because it's quite a sort of a deep bottom, isn't it?
It's
a long way from the top to the bottom, which is why it's long, lung busting as you sort of climb up. And again, if you look at a map, I'm looking at the 1 to 25,000 as we speak, and the contours are so close together that it's almost one thick line. I mean, really steep.
It is. And I know that I've walked up from the church. You can walk up to Longcombe Bottom as well, which is Longcombe Bottom. You can't walk in there because it's private land, but the views from either side are really nice. But you can walk up from the church to Longcombe Bottom. And when I've done that, there's a very steep path through the wood, and goodness me, it's steep. It's literally, yeah. It's like hands and knees almost.
Yeah.
And there's another path where I'm taking where I park at the church in Eddington and walk up the front side of Picket Hill from there, and again, that's very, very steep. Obviously, it's short and sweet, but you get quite high very quickly.
I think almost sort of word of warning: if you do that, the walk up from Bratton Church up to Longcombe Bottom up through the woods. I mean, the first time I did it, it was I can't remember what time of year it was, but it was actually it was probably about this time last year, if not a little bit later, and you know, apart from it being very steep, because it's wet and muddy. I mean, we were just walking up there with my wife. I mean, we were just sliding backwards. I mean, you're hardly making any progress at all.
Yeah, so. I know that last time I went up there was probably around November time. And I made the decision then that I'd give it a rest until the summer when it's all dried up, because it was pretty hair raising. It's very slippy and muddy.
Yeah, very wise.
Okay, so I think we're pretty much there in terms of everything I wanted to talk about in this particular area. I highly recommend the walk. Take your camera if you do it. Make sure the sun is shining. And share your photos. Come onto the Facebook page. We've got the Facebook page, and we've got a Facebook group called Hidden Wiltshire, which you're welcome to come and have a look at. And, you know, if you've managed to do this walk, or you want to mention or talk about things we may have missed in this podcast, or take issue with anything that we said, please come along and do that.
And of course, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be talking about one of my favourite places, the Deverils.
Yes, the Deverils. We've touched on those today in the context of King Alfred, but there's so much more there. And I'm really looking forward to getting together in 2 weeks to talk about that.
Yeah, fantastic. And thanks once again to Steve Dixon at Steve Dixon Creative for this week's music and sounds. Thank you, Steve.